So if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your foot causes you to stumble, whack that off. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck that puppy out. This is one of those days when we're going to have a real problem if we want to take this book literally. Because if we do, that means we become the church of multiple amputations. Is that really, truly what we want to do? Well, this is hyperbole, I hope. Okay, now, hyperbole is an exaggeration to a point of almost ridiculous to make the point, to get it across. But still, it raises the question, is there any part of our lives that does not lend itself to sin? If we start cutting parts off, what's left? So, do we really, truly need to cut off our hands and feet and everything else? Well, I suppose that's one answer. But that's a little drastic. And look at this. The focus is all on the outside. It's all external, on our actions, not what lies behind our actions in our hearts. Now, this is not the first time Jesus says something like this, nor is it the last. It is easy to go through the motions without our hearts being in it. But it's not just our actions that show that matter. It is our choices behind our actions based on what we carry within, our values and our beliefs, whether we are focused on loving others or on ourselves. Now, to be clear, this is not about willpower alone. You know, Jesus does not simply invite us into some kind of self-improvement course. Rather, it's about how we choose to live our whole lives. Do we make our choices through the eyes of Christ or through the eyes of the world with its what's in it for me thinking? It's not just our actions you show that matters. It's what lies within. So sometimes when we resolve to try to be more faithful, when we really try to live the path of Jesus a little more seriously, you know, sometimes we do come at it as if it is about willpower. So we try to be all self-reliant, thinking that it's all up to us to change our hearts on our own. Well, newsflash, we can't. We can't. If we could, we wouldn't need Jesus. So if our hearts are filled with selfishness and sinfulness, if we lean towards self-reliance and trusting ourselves instead of God, how do we get healed? Jesus. See, Jesus has another choice for us. So instead of literally chopping off body parts, Jesus starts with heart surgery. Because see, if our hearts are not healed, then whatever we do on the outside ultimately will not make any difference. And when I suggest heart surgery here, this is not literally fixing valves and clogged arteries, but it's much more about healing our desires and our tendencies, things like replacing selfishness with sharing, getting even with forgiveness, replacing hoarding with generosity, replacing judgment with mercy. Jesus heals by removing fear. Fear of being punished for every little thing we do. Fear of not being good enough. Fear of being a disappointment to God, or maybe a disappointment to ourselves. Jesus heals our hearts by removing our shame and feelings of hopelessness and despair that result from all the things we do that hurt other people. So we don't need to cut body parts off. It's more a matter of cutting ourselves off from the influences of the world we live in, with all of its short-sightedness and it's all about me, what can I get attitude. You know, elsewhere Jesus says, be in the world but not of it. Yeah? What this means is we live in this world, but we bring a different lens to look through. We don't let ourselves be defined by the world. So do not use the ways of the world as your compass. Instead, we are called to let Jesus point the way. Now, we've heard this is where the disciples got stuck. Just last week, the disciples were arguing with each other about who was more important than whom. Today, our words about Jesus open with John saying to Jesus, "Jesus, we saw somebody casting out demons in your name, and they weren't one of us, so we tried to stop them." And Jesus said, "Oh, John, don't do that. Don't do that. Whoever is for us is not against us." So in Jesus' strong words today, I wonder if they're actually directed right at the disciples after what they had just said and done, and how they keep showing they missed the point. With all of their vying for positions of power and prestige, trying to create an exclusive insider's club where you have to have the membership card to follow Jesus, the disciples didn't get it yet. They're still stuck in the world's assumptions of power and position of insiders and outsiders. And Jesus turns it all upside down. You know, last week when they were fighting about who was more important than whom, Jesus said, "Whoever would be first must be last. Whoever wants to be greatest must be your servant." So it was hard. It was hard for the disciples to see things in a different way. Now, we can't blame them. It's the world they live in. It's what they grew up with. It's what we grow up with. This is our default, okay? We're in the same boat they are. It was hard for them to see things differently. Where power is in mercy and love. Where greatness is in sacrifice and sharing. And the disciples didn't understand yet. Do we? Do we get what Jesus is saying? Here it is. Don't let the standards of the world we live in become your moral compass. Dare to live differently. Dare to live for the things that matter, not what you can put in a bank. Live for compassion and mercy, generosity and forgiveness, caring for the hungry and the poor, the unwanted, the hated. Don't judge them. Love them. Now, the cynic in us might say, "Yeah, well, if we do that, you know what? They may not change." And you know what? They may not. We do. We're changed. When we forgive, the ones we forgive, they may not care. They may not even notice. They might laugh at us. Doesn't matter. We're changed. We are changed because we are set free from carrying the pain and the anger and that slow burn of grudges that hold us. It's the way that gives life. So then after all this, to wrap things up very nicely with a clear and cogent point, Jesus says, "So everybody will be salted with fire. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another." There you have it. This is a phrase that can lead us to say, "What? Jesus, will you just tell us what you mean?" Well, the notion that might be missed on us is, in those times, 2,000 years ago and before, when a peace treaty was made between different peoples, they would exchange packages of salt. Because salt was extremely valuable, right up there with gold. A common phrase in Greek, the language of the New Testament, when the disciples came together and were united after they'd been fighting with each other was, get this, they ate salt with each other. Huh. So how does this all weave together? Don't cause others to sin, okay? Separate from the ways of the world and dare to live by the ways of Christ. Dare to love others and be generous, offering grace and forgiveness. And be a sign of the new peace treaty. Whoa. Peace treaty. Peace treaty? Between whom? A peace treaty between God and us. Not between us and God. Oh, no. It is between a peace treaty between God and us. Because God has come to us in Jesus to wage peace, to put fear and dread and shame and regret and guilt away. In Jesus, God makes us new if we'll let go of our own desires and make room for God to be at work in us. And Jesus says, be salty. Instead of being defined by the priorities of this world, be peacemakers. Be carriers of the new time. Be carriers of peace and new life. How? By daring to live like Jesus. So pass the salt, please. If the world says, what's in it for me? God's way says, how can we make the world better? The world says, get ahead and get even. Jesus says, be a servant, sacrifice, and forgive. Be peacemakers. Be the salt. Pass the salt.